Hey y'all, it's Barb.
It's Shay.
We're here to talk about a murder that's gonna knock you off your feet.
So giddy up, y'all. This is gonna be a wild one.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to another episode with your hosts, Barb and Shay. And it feels good to be covering another episode with you guys. Thank you to everyone who has voted on who they'd like us to cover at the end of this month. I am super excited to be covering this one for you guys.
Me too. I'm excited to hear you cover it.
I know. It's been a while since I've covered one, so I'm ready. With that being said, though, how's it going, Shay?
It's going good. You know, like I said, I'm really excited for the voters episode. It's going to be fun.
Yes, and if you voted, thank you, thank you, thank you. We appreciate all your feedback, too, for people who comment suggestions in there. We take those into consideration whenever we go about the next month, so thank you for that.
Yes. How are you doing, Barb?
I am doing good. I'm excited because I'm having the housewarming party, as you know.
Yes.
And I will be seeing you, like, tomorrow and the next day, so that's pretty cool.
And we can take pictures for shirts. Know.
Yes, we're going to be posting them for you guys on social media, so stay on the lookout for that. And with that being said, let's go ahead and dive in today's case. I got all of my information from murderpedia.org and gravereviews.com. They had an abundance of information on both of those websites, so feel free to check it out. And we will be taking it back to the 1930s when a saloon owner dipped his toes into some evil, terrifying, gruesome murders. This man is believed to have killed at least 20 women. And if you are a true crime listener, you may have already heard of him. His records are undeniably following his footsteps, and his shadows literally are everywhere. You may have heard of him by the name of the Alligator Man or Bluebeard of South Texas and even Butcher of Elmendorf. And I think that's how you say that city in Texas, but I'm not 100% sure. So he has several different names. Have you ever heard of this guy?
I actually haven't, but I was just listening to a podcast the other day where they were talking about naming of people, and I was like, I was agreeing with them. I was like, why do they get cool names?
I know.
I'm just like, that doesn't make any sense.
Yes, and they do, and it's weird because, like, I mean, if you're, like, a small town or somebody who literally has murdered so many people, you get these names, and it's like to come up with so many different ones. I mean, I don't know, but I am a true crime fan, and I actually haven't heard of this guy, so, but a lot of people have, and it was really interesting to me, so I wanted to share it with you guys. His real name, the Alligator Man's real name, is actually Joe Ball. And he was born on January 7th, 1896. He was born in San Antonio, Texas. His family was one of the founding families for the town of Elmendorf. And they were actually really, really wealthy at the time.
So that means he was just bored.
Yeah. I mean, who knows, honestly. But they invested in several properties of real estate and owned multiple businesses. There isn't too much I can find online about, like, how his childhood was, other than the family actually describing him as a loner and someone who really stayed to himself and the only thing that I actually found about him was that he loved shooting guns, and he had a huge talent for it. He was the great-great-grandson of John Crenshaw. This man is, in particular, was like an illegal slave trader back then. He was an illegal slave trader, kidnapper, and an illegal slave breeder. And evil doesn't fall too far from the tree. And maybe, I mean, I kind of believe in curses when it comes to family curses. And I think there was actually one on this family just because of all the evil that really like wrapped up in it. And I do believe that when it comes to wealth and how you obtain the money, especially back then, you were doing stuff you probably shouldn't have been doing.
Mm-hmm.
So Joe served in the military during World War One in Europe, but was discharged in 1919. And after being released, he quickly began making money by becoming a bootlegger. He was selling illegal liquor to anyone that would pay for it. I think it was whiskey, but I'm not 100% sure.
That's a thing?
Yeah.
I have never heard of that.
Yes. Well, back then it was a thing, yeah. He even had, like, a few wives, I believe, at the time. I don't know if he had a few at then, but he was quickly going to develop, like, three, I want to say. It was, like, two, and then some said four, but I'm for sure three. And after bootlegging for a while, he thought it would be a great idea to invest into a saloon and begin making profit from it. So he bought one, and he named it Sociable Inn. So in Elmendorf, Texas, and this place was actually off of Highway 181, and this, at the time he actually bought the saloon, it was in 1933. The saloon was built with two rooms in the rear, and the bar was towards the front with a working piano. Quickly after buying the saloon, he built a pond right outside and purchased five alligators to occupy it. And I want to say it's five. There's some sources that said three, some said five, some said seven, but most said five. So we're going to go with that. And surrounding the pond was a 10-foot tall fence that he basically kept around to keep the alligators in so they wouldn't like just roam around the place. He started charging guests money to see these live alligators and made plenty of money when it came to their feeding time. Guests would come out just to see these, and it became a good little attraction to the people's naked eye. They thought it was a cool attraction. You could eat, you could drink, you could see live alligators, and there were always new waitresses and bartending women. So it was like a big thing for guys too, because they could just go flirt with all the girls there.
So what, I want to know, like, what runs through a saloon owner's mind to say, let's get alligators. How about alligators? Like, that's the most random thing I've ever heard.
Yes. Well, a lot of people actually said it was like one of those, because we have one in Texas, I believe. I don't know the name of the stop, but you could actually see a live tiger, and I've been there.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
So yeah, so I think it's like one of those stop zoo places where you just get people because not everyone has it. So it's a way to for you to make more money and people to stop to bring business in.
That's crazy.
So no one could ever seem to like hold a job there when it came to waitresses and like hostess and bartenders. But nobody really knew why. But something dark and sinister was brewing behind closed doors. And I think police and the community should have picked up on this. Because, come to find out, the gators' food consisted mostly of live cats and dogs.
Aww.
And not only that, but there were other signs, such as a nearby neighbor complaining that there was a nasty and profound smell coming from the alligator pit. And Joe, get this, he literally responded by pulling a gun on him and telling him something along the lines of, like, quote, mind your own business before you become part of their food.
That's a trigger warning, or that's a sign right there.
I know. And not only that, it's like if he's willing to feed these alligators alive dogs and cats, why is there not alarm bells coming off? I mean, maybe it was a thing back then and they don't love animals like how we love them now, but that would never fly. Like that would be like illegal, you know?
That would literally be like shut down in one day.
Yes, it's like hello. And not only that, but then like neighbors that live close to him can literally testify and say that there's a weird nasty smell coming from the pit, so you should probably go check that out,
you know. So, they were dealing with other murderers at that time. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, they probably were, honestly. I mean, he went off about it telling the guy that the smell was meat rotting and that he was going to serve it to the animals, but it was just rotted meat at the time.
Ew.
These signs should have been blaring to the police within the area, and it took a while for them to actually step in and do something. After operating his tavern for a while, people really began to notice several ladies had gone missing in such a short period of time. In 1937, a woman named Minnie Gotthard, I believe that's how you say your last name, went missing, and the family really started to get worried. So his tavern has only been open for 4 years, 5 years at that.
Mm-hmm.
And all these women just started going missing. I mean, hello, but when she went missing, they started getting worried. And so they took it upon themselves to call up to the police station and start raising questions. They want to know, where is she? And since Joe had recently employed Minnie, and get this, listeners, apparently they were lovers. And Minnie was one of his wives. I think like one of the first wives since opening the tavern. And some sources also claim that she was pregnant with his child. So they decided to interview him, but nothing felt suspicious, and there was actually no evidence pointing in the direction of him possibly murdering or kidnapping her and like keeping her away or something like that. So they basically just dropped him as a possible lead and left the tavern.
So she just like disappeared, you know?
Yeah.
She just, you know, she's a ghost now. She can like, she just like left. She's like, yes. I'm out.
And I honestly think that they should have kept digging at the first time, because especially she was pregnant with this child, and she was only like 20 something, and he was a lot older than her. So they should have been like, okay, what's going on? Like, I'm going to continue to question you and whatnot. But maybe because he had a lot of money, he just was like, okay, go on, kind of thing.
Yeah.
So shortly after her disappearance, another family decided to report to the police whenever their daughter, Julia Turner, disappeared. And so what did they do? They actually went back to the sociable inn and talked to Joe. In response, he told the investigators, and Julia was working for him at that time too. So he actually told the investigators that Julia came to him and said that she needed to start something new, and she needed to move on. She needed to get away from her current, like, person she was living with, and she just needed to start somewhere else, and she needed to move on and stop working there. So they believed it, and they left again. The investigators then started off with searching Julia's room. So they're like, okay, well, where can we go now? Let's go, and we're gonna raid her room and see what we can find. They noticed that she didn't appear to have packed any clothes or anything someone would need whenever they decided to leave home. She literally, nothing was gone. With finding this out, they then decided to drive back over to the tavern to further question Joe. During their conversation, Joe stated now that he just suddenly remembered that he gave Julia $500 to start off somewhere new.
So $500 seems like a lot in the 1930s, so I don't know how he would forget that. But then again, he also was very wealthy, so to him it's probably like nothing.
But like, my still thing is, yeah, like, why wouldn't you say that during your first, like, questioning session?
Hmm.
And with that being said, he said that she was just in a tragic state, and she needed to get away from her roommate, like, immediately. So he was like, okay, here's $500. Take the next bus. Do whatever you got to do. Like, see you later. That's it.
So real quick, I just looked it up, and in the 1930s, 500 is equivalent to $8,134 today. So
that's crazy. Yeah, like, how could you forget that, honestly?
I don't know. But it's I couldn't, for sure.
We're literally asking each other these questions, but it's so stupid because the cops believed it. So they just turned around and left again. So now you're going to fast forward about 2 months later, after now two girls have gone missing. The local police of Elmendorf decided to call in the Texas Rangers and handed this entire case of missing women to them because two more women were now missing. So in the matter of, who knows, maybe like 4 months or something like that, now four women are missing. And they both previously worked at Joe Ball's tavern. So where did the Texas Rangers begin? They started off with checking into the entirety of the sociable end's background. That included Joe Ball's background. That included the employees. I mean, every employee that has ever worked there, their background. And they soon came to realize that in over a short period of time, over a few dozen women have vanished without a trace. Not only that, but a couple of his wives were seen, and then people in the community say they just disappeared as well. And no one had seen or heard from them quite some time. And when I say this, one of his wives were the girls I mentioned. But it's just crazy to me that he married these girls and then they just disappeared. Nobody, he has no idea where his wives went. And not only that, but several workers at his tavern are missing as well.
I mean, caution, like trigger around here. Hey, here. He's like basically saying, pick me, it's me.
Yeah, like, and it almost makes me wonder that the reason why he hasn't been caught is because of how wealthy he is.
I would not put it past that, honestly.
Yes, and like how much real estate the family owns in that town. It's like, we have all this money, we own all these businesses, like, you're really gonna arrest me? You're gonna arrest my, like, somebody in our family type thing?
Yeah.
So, it didn't matter, though, because ultimately justice prevailed. But the Texas Rangers decided to hold Joe Ball for several hours. There was question after question and answer after answer. Ultimately, during the interview, Joe didn't crack and was, I mean, they couldn't keep holding him, so he was eventually released. And after being a prime suspect in multiple what police believe was murders, I mean, vanishings. They can't confirm it was a murder, but they believe it is. They just know that the women are missing. After he was interviewed, a man by the name of Clifford Wheeler came forward. And I'd like to mention really quickly that multiple sources call him Clifford or Clifton. So I'm not too sure which name he really went by, but for this episode, we're going to call him Clifton. And see, Clifton Wheeler was Joe Ball's handyman whenever he was working at the tavern. He did plenty of work that was asked of him, including disposing pieces of two dead women's bodies into the alligator pond whenever a gun was held to his head. He told police that Minnie, his pregnant wife, was shot in the head and then buried inside Corpus Christi, and she was buried naked and 13 feet below the sand. Clifton told police that when Joe began liking Dolores, which was another woman that he had hired to become a waitress at the time, that Minnie became jealous and threatened Joe with a love letter, and in return, he killed her for it.
That's a little extreme.
Yes, and I don't know what that, like, love letter entailed. Like, maybe if you don't leave Dolores, or, like, if you choose Dolores, then I'm going to tell people this or that, or, like, I'm going to leave you, I'm going to take the kid. I honestly don't know. It just was, she was killed for it by the handyman's knowledge. So, 3 months after Minnie was officially missing in the papers, he decided to marry this girl, Dolores. So this would have made her his second wife at this stage in his life. And not too long after, she ended up in a car accident, and she actually lost her arm in this car accident. And then suddenly she vanished too into thin air. Turns out she ran off to California in order to escape Joe and feared she too ended up disappearing and never heard of again. And she actually comes to testify and tell police. Like, she was terrified of Joe. She believes that Joe murdered Minnie and along several other women. But Joe Ball quickly moved on when Dolores disappeared and ran off, and he was in an affair with another young early 20s woman named Hazel Brown. So I believe he was still married to Dolores at the time, but now since she moved on to California, he decided to marry another woman named Hazel Brown. He'd eventually tire of her though too and ultimately kill her. Clifford said that at some point he was forced to help Joe. He said that he remembers dismembering Hazel's body, and then the body was burnt into ash before disposing of it along the San Antonio River. Along with Clifford's witness report, that neighbor I kind of mentioned earlier actually fled off to some other state at one point because he was terrified that he was going to get killed by Joe, and he decided to go to the cops and tell the cops what he, I guess, kind of was like witnessing and like what their conversations amounted to whenever he did live next to door to the tavern. And he said that he saw Joe curving off pieces of human meat and like feeding it to the alligators, and that's what ultimately made him flee. Like, that was the last straw, I guess, and he thought that, okay, maybe something's gonna happen to me because I know all these things.
Shoot, I don't blame him. I'd been out.
I know, I'd be out too. Shoot. But on September 24th in the year of 1938, the police decided to make another stop at the old sociable inn. But this time, they wanted to take a look into the barrels of meat inside the tavern. Joe Ball quickly realized what was happening. So they were finally going to uncover most likely what was probably stored human meat waiting to be tossed to the gators and maybe served in, they believe, the very own tavern's kitchen.
Ew, I knew that was coming.
Yes, they believe that that could have been a big possibility, that meat from humans was being served to other humans. So when Joe realized what was going to happen and that most likely he was going to be arrested for multiple murders, he quickly pushed the no sell button on the cash register, which slung open the money drawer, and he picked up the revolver and shot himself. Some resources claim he shot himself in the chest, in the heart, and then some say that was in the head. Before he could be arrested that day, he decided that he would take the easy way out and just kill himself. After he committed suicide, the police took it upon themselves to investigate the rest of the inn. And they uncovered, what they uncovered inside was barrels and barrels of blood-soaked, rotting meat. And they found the bloody axe that he used to chop it up with. I know. So the alligator man is proven to have killed two women for sure, because both of the bones were uncovered. And they were both his lovers. And a third wife escaped to another state to hope to not meet the same fate as the previous wives. And Joe Ball is suspected to be the killer of over 20 brutal killings within that area. And with that being said, there's no like proof that there is, or that the meat was given to the alligators. I mean, I'm not really sure if that's true, because from what they could find of the one wife was that she was buried in Corpus, and then in terms of the handyman, the other lady, his other wife, was like, her ashes were burned in like along the river. So I'm not too sure if, like, why would he not feed the alligators then?
Maybe because those were more like personal to him, and all the rest of them, maybe he got rejected by them or something, and he was like, well, if you're gonna reject me, you get the alligators, you know. Maybe, yeah, just different ways he was maybe going upwards in his killings, and he was like, oh, I can feed him to the alligators, and nobody would ever be able to prove it.
Yep. Yeah, that's so true, because like they would dispose of like all the evidence kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk about, like, what happened after. So what happened after the police, like, took over the inn, closed the inn down. He's now dead, and the handyman and whatnot. Well, apparently the handyman who was forced into disposing of the two bodies was sentenced to jail for 2 years, and then he was later released. The alligators were all sent off to the San Antonio Zoo, and people would still come and see them, but now they're just contained at the zoo. I'd like to point out that there were a few different details in the resources depending on where you looked while researching. I chose to fit in this episode, but I could find, like, what was the most repeated information. And taking a case from the early 1900s is always like picking through a bale of hay. I mean, things get turned around, and, you know, all it is just relating or relaying the information after information on different websites. So I just kind of saw what was being said the most, and this is what I decided to share with you guys. So I hope the information I told you got, like, today was pretty accurate, and feel free to do research of your own. There is some videos on YouTube as well that I actually watched before sharing this with y'all. So I did my best to try and pick out the facts. But with that being said, what did you think, Shay?
That was great. I think it's crazy that I've never heard of this, but, you know, anything that's, like, in the 1930s or whatever, like you said, is very hard to research. And, you know, filing and all that was not the best back then. But this was a really interesting case. I think that's insane. And I for sure feel like he killed more than just his wife. So I think he actually killed a lot of women. And they just, you know, him taking the coward's way out, you know, didn't help anything. But great job.
Exactly. And thank you. And I think so, too, just because of how many, like, women were coming and going and not seen of again. And it's like, okay, you have a pattern here, clearly, you know.
Yeah, not every single one of those is just going to walk up, like, get up and say, I don't want to live here anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So I think this case is crazy because it really goes to show, like, what people could be doing behind closed doors. And it's not just, like, it couldn't be always just somebody random, like some lonely person no one has never heard of living in a small town, but it could literally be someone who an entire town knows of. Anyone, no matter how much money, how little money, how you grew up, who you know, who you don't know, like, anyone is capable of evil. Anyone is capable of doing things you'd never even think they were capable of doing. So, with that being said, we love you guys, and always stay out of dark places and watch your back, because you never know who's lurking. Bye.
Bye.